Lights! Camera! Action! Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Animation Podcast, a weekly podcast about all things animation brought to you by Filmbook. My name is Matt Brunet, but some of you may know me as Animat from my YouTube channel, Electric Dragon 505, home of web series that are all about animation, including Animation Look Back and Animat's Reviews. Now, if this is your first time here in the Animation Podcast, well, let me tell you, you are in for a very, very special episode. This is a really big one where I got some pretty big stories for you guys. And in this episode in particular, what I'm about to tell you is that I will give you guys a summary of what's going on in this year's nominations at the Academy Awards, specifically for the animation categories. Then afterwards, we will be looking into the brand new cast that has been included for the upcoming animated film, The Incredibles 2. Then we will talk about The Cat in the Hat and how it's actually not going to be made by who you think it would be. Then afterwards, we will be looking into something that we hope is just going to be direct-to-DVD. Please, God, just let it be direct-to-DVD. And then finally, we will end things off with Animat's Pick of the Week. If you want to check out more episodes of the Animation Podcast, then all you have to do is head on down to Filmbook, which is film-book.com, by searching the Animation Podcast. And you can also email us at podcast@filmbook.com with the Animation Podcast in the subject line. And so, ladies and gentlemen, to start things off on this episode, I might as well go ahead and do the biggest story that happened this week. And this is actually a pretty big one. It's already been massively discussed about ever since they first revealed it. I am talking, of course, ladies and gentlemen, the nominations for the 90th Academy Awards. Yes, they have officially been revealed. And my God, so many emotions have been poured out when the list has pretty much been revealed and when everything has been announced. And as you may know, just to give you guys a quick summary about what's been happening in general with the Oscars, of course you may have heard that The Shape of Water is the big movie this year that actually got the most nominations with a total of 13 of them. And of course, it's going to be up against a lot of big name competitors in there. We're talking about movies like The Darkest Hour, Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, I, Tonya, what the fridge else are they going to be battling against? Movies like Phantom Thread, Dunkirk, and so much more. Like, these movies will be going head-to-head to see which ones will be gathering the most Oscars and who is going to be getting the big one, Best Picture. However, considering that this is the Animation Podcast, we're going to be looking into the ones that are specifically catered to animation. Specifically, I'm going to start things off with Best Animated Short and give out my thoughts on that. And then afterwards, we will be discussing about Best Animated Feature. And oh boy, this has been quite a controversial list, I tell ya. Like, this could be something that could even overshadow the whole Lego Movie controversy. But first things first, allow me to go ahead and discuss a little bit about Best Animated Short. So, without further ado, and so, ladies and gentlemen, the nominees for Best Animated Short Film are Dear Basketball, Garden Party, Lou, Negative Space, and Revolting Rhymes Part 1. Now, I'm just going to go ahead and start things off that as I am recording this podcast right now, I have yet to actually see most of these shorts. I haven't seen Garden Party, I haven't seen Negative Space, and I haven't seen Revolting Rhymes yet. But I will. I promise you guys, I'll do my best to go and see all these animated shorts before the actual Oscars would come in. So I do have plenty of time. And I'll do my best to try to find them, and I'll even be willing to pay to actually go ahead and see those shorts. But one thing I could definitely say for sure, I am so glad that Lou and Dear Basketball actually did get a nomination, because both these shorts are actually really phenomenal. You got Lou, of course, which is the big Pixar animated short that appeared before Cars 3, and honestly, during that whole theater experience, Lou was actually the best thing out of all of it, because it's so creative with the way that they would take all these different objects and they would create this one character out of it. Like, it really is a lot of fun, and even if you guys don't really care much about Cars 3, at least looking at Lou really does make it worth it. And I would definitely categorize Lou as one of the most creative Pixar shorts that they have ever done. So I'm glad I see that getting a nomination. And then, of course, you got Dear Basketball, which I've already talked about this a few times in the animation podcast before. And just in case you don't know it, this is actually an animated short created by three masters of their own field. Of course, since it is Dear Basketball, this is actually based on a poem written by Kobe Bryant, and he is kind of like the head honcho of the project, kind of like the executive producer. And the director and the man who is supplying the animation is one of the masters of the medium, Glenn Keane. And finally, the music, the powerful booming music that they supplied in this is actually done by John Williams. Yes, that John Williams. So combine all these three masters together and you pretty much get Dear Basketball, which really is a heartwarming tribute to something that Kobe Bryant absolutely loves, which is basketball. And it truly is an inspiring piece that really does tell you to follow your dreams and that, like, despite all the odds, like, no matter how much you do, like, if you manage to work hard, you can be able to make your dreams come true. And honestly, I find it to really be beautiful. I'm sure you could go and find it online. I've seen it circulating on Facebook a few times, so I'm sure if you can look it up, you could definitely go ahead and find Dear Basketball for free. But yeah, overall, I could say right now that and honestly, this is just my thoughts before actually seeing the others like Garden Party, Negative Space, and Revolting Rhymes. If either Lou or Dear Basketball ends up winning Best Animated Short, I would be really satisfied. I would be happy just right over there. And so, with all that said, now that we got the Best Animated Short list done, let us go ahead and go into the big one. The moment that we have all been waiting for. The nominees for Best Animated Feature Film, and my god, let's just say, do you guys remember when I made my predictions, in the animation podcast, where I tried to guess what could be on the list, like, what's going to be the five animated films that will be nominated? Yeah, I was kind of way off, to be honest. Okay, so, with all that said, ladies and gentlemen, the nominees for Best Animated Feature Film are The Boss Baby, DreamWorks Animation, The Breadwinner, Cartoon Saloon, Coco, Pixar Animation Studios, Ferdinand, Blue Sky Studios, and finally, Loving Vincent, Breakthrough Films. And honestly, I am not happy with this list at all, and I might as well start things off by explaining the biggest reason why I'm not happy with this list. Now, I actually do mean this literally, like not figuratively, not kind of like, no, like flat out literally, this is just a copy of the Best Animated Features list at the Golden Globes. Like, literally, all of it is pretty much the same thing. Down to the point that they have the same independent animated features, which is also a very rare thing that the Golden Globes would do in the first place. And they also got the same random batch of mainstream animated films with The Boss Baby and Ferdinand. This is all literally the same thing. I don't think this has ever happened before in the history of the Oscars and the Golden Globes that they share the same Best Animated Feature Film category. It's almost like the Oscars felt a little bit lost. Like, they were confused. They don't know what to do with the Best Animated Feature category, so they had to go next door at the Golden Globes, and they were like, Globes, hope I'm not giving you any trouble, or hope I'm not bothering you or anything. Do you mind helping me out with something?
Yeah, sure. Well, what is it?
Well, honestly, it's just this list here. You know, I'm trying to figure out what to nominate for Best Animated Feature Film. I mean, I got The Breadwinner, and I got Coco, of course. I just don't know what to do with the three others.
Oh, really? Well, Actually, can I ask you something? Do you know what's going to be the winner?
Yeah, I think I'm just going to go with Coco.
So, with that said, is it really going to matter if you really have to carefully pick which one you got to go with the nominations?
Well, honestly, I guess I don't think so.
Here, you know what? Actually, here, take my list. You know, you could just copy it, no matter what. It doesn't matter. Just, here, you could take it. Are you sure? Yeah. It's perfectly fine. Are you sure? Like, it's not gonna upset anyone? Like, listen, if Coco is going to be the winner, is it going to matter who's going to get nominated?
Well, I guess not.
There, exactly.
All right. Well, I guess it'll get me out of a pickle, so, yeah, thank you very much, Globes.
Yeah, no problem, Oscar.
And that's basically what happened right over here. It's just, somehow, the Oscars decided, screw it, let's just go ahead and copy this. And let me just start things off, actually, with the one movie that, for some reason, not just the Oscars, but plenty of other award shows decided to just go ahead and skip over, which is the Lego Batman movie. And a lot of people are pretty much saying that out of all the things that got snubbed at the Oscars, a lot of people would say that some of the biggest Oscar snubs this year would include Steven Spielberg not getting a Best Director nomination for The Post, James Franco not getting a Best Actor nomination for The Disaster Artist, or Wonder Woman not getting any sort of nomination at all. But then there is also the Lego Batman movie not nominated for Best Animated Feature. And that's where you find a little bit of that Lego movie controversy reemerging again. But honestly, I do find this to be a little bit worse than the Lego movie controversy, because here's the thing. As much as the Lego movie itself got so much praise and stuff like that, when you look at the list of the animated films that got nominated at the Oscars, at least those ones, like the animated films of 2014, they really do deserve it in their own merit. Like, when you think about films like The Box Trolls, Big Hero 6, How to Train Your Dragon 2, and the independent films like Song of the Sea and The Tale of the Princess Kaguya, these are all incredible animated features that, in their own right, they deserve to at least get an Oscar nomination. So that's why you can give a little bit of a pass for not actually giving the Lego movie a nomination. Like, sure, maybe the Lego movie would deserve to get an Oscar nomination for Best Animated Feature, but so do those films as well. Like, they definitely earn their spot in there. In here, however, now, I've said this before about the animated films of 2017, it's just that it really is a really bad year. And I'm not just saying that because we had the Emoji Movie, but it's mostly because the grand majority of animated films, they range from decent to mediocre to just plain suck. Like, we got a whole batch of absolutely forgettable animated films. And the only ones that are actually worth remembering, the ones that got critical praise from critics and audiences, are just Coco and the Lego Batman movie. Maybe you can add in Captain Underpants as well, but that's pretty much it, at least in terms of the mainstream animated films. So it is really disappointing that one of the movies that did actually get critical praise in terms of an animated feature, that it would just flat out be ignored at the Oscars. And I find that to be a little bit ridiculous. And I know that there are some people that would argue that, well, technically it could be because it's technically it's a spin-off film and they don't really care much about those, or that it's a superhero film and they don't really want to pay much attention to that, which is also why Wonder Woman didn't get a nomination. That are also, technically, since it is a Lego movie, it is actually just one big commercial in order to sell toys and stuff like that. Okay, maybe I get those arguments, but again, like, we're talking about one of the very few animated films of 2017 that got critical praise. How does that not earn itself an Oscar nomination? And instead, we end up with a list where The Boss Baby is now an Oscar-nominated animated feature. Yep, I don't know what the fridge happened, but we ended up in a spot where one of the worst DreamWorks films is now Oscar nominated for some reason. No, not Captain Underpants, The Boss Baby. The movie where Alec Baldwin is acting like Alec Baldwin in a baby's body making lowbrow baby jokes. That apparently is enough to get the Oscars' attention. Like, why? Like, you know, honestly, though, the saddest thing about that movie getting a nomination is that we probably should have seen this coming. We really should. And the reason why I say that is because you look at many of the other award shows that they would put their list of best animated feature, and some of them would actually have The Boss Baby. Like, it is actually pretty prominent, not just with the Golden Globes, but even with the Annie Awards. Other than Coco and The Breadwinner, The Boss Baby is actually quite a competitor who did gather a good amount of awards for itself. And yeah, and one of them is actually for Best Animated Feature. So technically, we shouldn't be surprised that The Boss Baby would find itself at the Oscars as well. But then again, there are so many other movies that are much more worthy to get an Oscar nomination than the frickin' Boss Baby. I mean, literally, you can't think of anything else. Like, not even Captain Underpants is worthy enough to get an Oscar nomination. I mean, sure, that movie didn't make half the amount of money that The Boss Baby did at the box office, but at least the amount of effort that it was put into that film is a lot stronger. And I mean, it's not just Captain Underpants. I mean, you couldn't just put in, like, Despicable Me 3. You couldn't just put in even Cars 3. Or actually, if we can all agree onto one type of movie that is better to give an Oscar nomination than The Boss Baby, it should have been a third independent film. Like, why not just give it to something like Mary and the Witch's Flower or Big Bad Fox and Other Tales? And actually, you know, the saddest truth is that if Best Animated Feature would actually be based on the quality of the movie, then the list would be just Coco and four other independent films that the general public has never heard of. You know, that is kind of the sad reality about this. But yeah, like, out of all the movies, I really want to know, why the fridge is The Boss Baby here? Why pick The Boss Baby to be an Oscar-nominated animated film? I mean, seriously. But if it's not The Boss Baby that you would be upset about that got an Oscar nomination, you got freaking Ferdinand right over here. I mean, seriously, I know, like, technically, Ferdinand is not necessarily the worst animated film that came out in 2017. That spot is already given to the Emoji Movie. But really, I mean, you had one job, Oscars. You had one job. The one time that you would have to give Blue Sky Studios the attention to go and actually give one of their films a nomination for Best Animated Feature. The one time you can actually do that, it's not with the Peanuts movie, it's with freaking Ferdinand? Really? Like, what is it that made Ferdinand stand out, not only among all the other animated films, like, again, like why pick like, I'll ask again, the same question that I asked for The Boss Baby. Why not go with something like Captain Underpants, or Cars 3, or Despicable Me 3? Or why not another independent animated feature? Why do you have to go with frickin' Ferdinand? I mean, seriously. It's not even one of Blue Sky's best films, and yet, like, somehow it found itself here. Honestly, I'm just baffled. I'm not saying it's the worst. It's just, like, one of those things that it just feels out of place for some reason. Like, you look at it and you ask, well, why are you here? You know, it's just, it really does, you know, for me, it just doesn't make sense seeing something like Ferdinand or the freaking Boss Baby get a nomination. But if I may go ahead and shed some light onto the Best Animated Feature category, of course, there are some of those, well, there are some that, in my opinion, they do not deserve to have the Oscar nomination for Best Animated Feature Film. There are others, however, that definitely do deserve to have that recognition. First of all, of course, you got Coco, which also, may I add, actually has two nominations at the Oscars, not just for Best Animated Feature Film, but is also nominated for Best Original Song for Remember Me, which I will be rooting for. And on a side note, actually, surprisingly enough, unlike at the Golden Globes, the Oscars only put in one animated feature to be nominated for Best Original Song. Like, if you remember at the Golden Globes, they actually put in The Star and they put in Ferdinand also to be nominated in there. But the rest are actually just some of the live action films. Of course, you see Mudbound with Mighty River and The Greatest Showman with This Is Me. Then there's also, you got Marshall for Stand Up for Something and Call Me By Your Name for The Mystery of Love. So honestly, at least for me, I will be rooting for Coco to win. We'll just have to wait and see how it goes at the Oscars. Maybe it won't, but still, I mean, I will give it the support. But yeah, I mean, Coco, of course, it is one of, if not the best animated film of the year in terms of the mainstream animated features. So yeah, it definitely does deserve its spot right over there. And then, of course, you also got The Breadwinner, such a powerful movie. And yeah, considering that, like, other than Coco, it really is an animated film that's been hopping from award show to award show. You see that name appear all the time. So definitely great that it's on the list. And then you also got Loving Vincent, which is actually a very interesting movie. Considering that if you look at the reactions from critics, they do say that as a movie, it is a little bit weak. But the biggest reason why it's in there is mainly because of the animation. Like, this is the type of film that no way possible that it's going to win, but at least what it did in a technical level, it is enough to at least get an attention to get nominated at the Oscars. With Loving Vincent, this is literally the first oil-painted animated feature where every frame is literally a work of art. Every frame is actually a painting. And, you know, I do understand that with that technical achievement, it would be enough to at least just get an Oscar nomination. So I would say that overall with this list, yeah, it is kind of crappy. Especially, it's just for me, I am more upset of the fact that it really is unoriginal, considering that this is just a flat out copy to what they did at the Golden Globes. I'm more upset about that, more so than just which individual movies are actually nominated. Like, yeah, for me, my personal opinion, I don't feel like The Boss Baby or Ferdinand should get an Oscar nomination for Best Animated Feature Film. There are better films than that that do deserve it. But on the other hand, I guess technically it doesn't necessarily matter, considering that a lot of people do know that Coco is going to win. And like, if there is any major plot twist, if it's not going to be Coco, then of course it's going to be The Breadwinner. But overall, yeah, it is kind of a weak list. But there are some things I am happy about. I am happy, of course, that Coco and The Breadwinner, they got a nomination, very well deserved. And also with Best Animated Short, with Lou and Dear Basketball, those ones are definitely well deserved as well. But yeah, it is a pretty disappointing list this year, and it has been causing a major uproar. Like, I think out of all the things that people got upset about in terms of what got nominated and what didn't get nominated, one of the big things, at the very least, is actually the fact that The Boss Baby got a godforsaken nomination. But yeah, regardless of what I said, though, I'm just going to say congratulations to all the people that got nominated at this year's Oscars for their great achievement with what they did with their own respective movies. And who's going to be the big winner? Well, some answers are pretty obvious. Some of them are still remain a mystery. We'll just have to go ahead and wait and see until March 4th when we are going to discover who will win the Oscar. Now, for our next story right over here, let me tell you guys a little bit of a funny story that happened this week when I was just browsing around social media. I was just checking on Twitter, seeing what madness has in store for me, what new things that I can learn about. And then I noticed that on Pixar's account, they decided to do a creative little spin on a recent trend that's been going on. Now, if you may know, Google actually released this special app or this special little thing in which you can put a picture of yourself and Google will analyze it and tell you not only which person in a painting you look like the most, but also the percentage of how much you look like that painting. So you can upload a picture of yourself and it will tell you, oh, you look 70% like this person in a Picasso painting. Oh, you look like 50% like this person in an Edvard Munch's painting. Or you can put this picture and you look like 80% like this person in a Monet painting and all that kind of stuff. So what Pixar decided to do is that they decided to put in a creative little spin where they would take an actor and they would put a painting or a concept art of a character and they would try to compare them, saying like, oh, Craig T. Nelson looks 50% like Mr. Incredible, or Samuel Jackson looks 60% like Frozone and all that kind of stuff. But then when I was continuing, I was looking into it and I saw like, who the fridge is this character? I've never heard of this person before. Wait, I know the actor, but I don't know the person. Like, wait, why are they all this? Why are they only doing it with incredible character? Oh, I see what you're doing. Oh, so that's what they did. This isn't just trying to make a cute little trend. You are announcing big news right over here. I see what you're doing, Pixar. I see what you're doing. Yes, and what it is that while they did that little trend, Pixar simultaneously announced the new people that will be providing the voice of a new character that will be appearing in the upcoming animated feature, The Incredibles 2. Now, there are some pretty big surprises, and there is actually one replacement in the cast, but the list that they got is actually quite intriguing. There are some that they did reveal who these characters are, and there are some that, well, I guess for now, it still remain a mystery. Like, there is one that they did reveal that this is a couple, in a way. That it's going to be played by Catherine Keener and Bob Odenkirk, in which, if I remember the names, if I can remember my memory, they're called Windsor and Evelyn Dever. So some people are saying that it could be possible those are going to be the villains, but it's pretty much to say that we got Catherine Keener and Bob Odenkirk onto The Incredibles 2. But then there are some others that they did reveal who they are. And I'm actually going to be reading through my source here on Deadline. And it actually says, we got Sophia Bush, who is going to be playing the character of Void, a young and overeager wannabe superhero and mega fan of Elastigirl. Her superpower is the ability to divert and manipulate objects around her by creating voids that allow the objects to appear and disappear and shift in space. Then there is also another one, Isabella Rossellini, who's going to be playing a dignified foreign ambassador committed to the support and legalization of superheroes. And finally, you got Jonathan Banks, who's going to be playing the role of Rick Dicker, who heads up the official super relocation program, helping the Parr family keeping their super identity secret. Now, Rick Dicker might be a familiar name for you, for those who are major fans of The Incredibles, because last time it was actually played by character designer Bud Lucky, who actually did provide his voice in several other projects as well, including the animated short Boundin'. He also played Chuckles the Clown in Toy Story 3, and he also provided the voice of Eeyore in the 2011 Winnie the Pooh movie. But it seems like, considering that he did retire earlier this decade, he's now going to be replaced by Jonathan Banks. And what a bit of a coincidence, considering that now we got Bob Odenkirk and Jonathan Banks, where now it seems like Saul Goodman and Mike are going to be working together from not only just in Better Call Saul and Breaking Bad, but also in The Incredibles 2. And honestly, coming from a family that loves Better Call Saul and Breaking Bad, I personally find it to be a really cool thing. Now, with this new cast of characters, honestly, it does actually make me feel a little bit more excited for The Incredibles 2, because these are very well-respected actors. Like, they have done some great work before. Again, I've already said that I really do appreciate the works of Bob Odenkirk and Jonathan Banks, since they did a great job in Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul. And I have seen some works by Isabella Rossellini and Sophia Bush, and they've done a great job. And honestly, the characters that they are playing, they're actually going to be quite interesting. Like, the ambassador character that Isabella is going to be playing, like, that does sound like she's going to be a character where they could bring in kind of a social message. Like, just by the description alone, like, it does feel like, maybe this is not going to be the case, but maybe The Incredibles 2 could have a message about immigration that they could bring in there. And, you know, it is always welcome. I mean, usually Disney and Pixar, they could be really good when it comes to handling serious messages onto an animated feature. So if they're capable of pulling that off, and maybe that could be the case, then I'm all for it. And also, I just want to say right now, I know that a lot of people could be a bit disappointed that Bud Lucky is not reprising his role, but I do have confidence with Jonathan Banks that maybe he's not going to sound like Bud Lucky, but with the type of characters that he plays, like, I can guarantee you he will capture the spirit of Rick Dicker. So it'll be a noticeable change, but it won't be that big of a change in spirit. But if I can be very honest, there is one character that I am a little bit worried, and that is actually the character of Void. Because with the way that they are describing Void, I don't know about you, but am I the only one that's getting some Syndrome vibes? Like, does that not sound like Buddy? Like, you know, like the way that it's pretty much describing it, it's a little bit like what happened in the prologue of The Incredibles. Like, everything that happened before, like, when Syndrome was Incrediboy. That's what it kind of sounds like what they're doing with Void. And honestly, I would not be excited to see if Void would actually turn out to be, like, oh, the surprise twist villain in all this because her heart got broken by Elastigirl and stuff like that, you know? That would just seem lazy in the writing department, where they would have to just recycle material from the first film and try to incorporate it onto that. That's honestly my biggest worry so far with The Incredibles. But if that's not the case and they want to do something different with Void, then honestly, I'm all for it. But yeah, overall, looking at this list of the new cast and the characters that they are playing, it really does make me excited for The Incredibles 2. And it is possible we could be seeing something new and something awesome out of it. And after 14 years of just waiting for another adventure with the Parr family and The Incredibles, I think overall, there's a strong chance that it's going to be worth it. And if you guys are excited as I am to see The Incredibles 2, then all you have to do is just wait until June 15th for the movie's release. Now for our next story right over here, we are going to be talking about The Cat and the Hat. Yes, we all know the classic and beloved Dr. Seuss story. And it seems like right now there's going to be an animated feature based on the classic book. And I can hear you guys right now, well, I can actually hear some of you probably groaning and not really happy about this news, thinking like, oh God, how is Illumination gonna screw this one up this time? They've already really messed up the Lorax, and they could probably screw up the Grinch. So how are they going to destroy The Cat in the Hat and make that a bad film? Well, before you get any assumptions of that, let me guys tell you that I know as a fact that Illumination will not screw up this Cat in the Hat movie. And I am not saying that to defend Illumination. I am saying that because Illumination is actually not the one that's going to be making this movie. I mean, let's be honest, it's kind of impossible to really screw up something when you're not the one actually making it. Yes, believe it or not, this is actually kind of a surprising twist right over here. It's not Illumination making the Dr. Seuss movies anymore. It's actually going to be Warner Brothers. Yes, Warner Animation Group has signed on with Dr. Seuss Enterprises in order not only to create a Cat in the Hat movie, but now they're going to be the ones that are going to be making a series of animated features based on the works of Dr. Seuss. And the first one that they are going to be doing is going to be the Cat in the Hat, which right now, it's already in development, it's already started, and right now they are on the hunt to go and find writers for the project. Now, if I may go ahead and read from my source here from The Hollywood Reporter, I got a couple of quotes to read here. One of them is going to be from Toby Emmerich, who is the chairman at Warner Brothers. He stated, "Our Pictures Group is home to some of the world's most popular film franchises, and we're honored to add Dr. Seuss titles to that roster. With Warner Animation Group, we've really revitalized our feature animation activities, and this partnership with Dr. Seuss Enterprises will continue our move into world-class, wide-appeal animated fare." And then we also got a quote from Susan Brandt, the president of Dr. Seuss Entertainment. And she stated, "For generations, Dr. Seuss has entertained and delighted children and adults alike with his whimsical tales. Our partnership with Warner Animation Group continues those efforts by reimagining the beloved characters and stories for theater-going audiences, while keeping the integrity of Dr. Seuss's vision intact." And so with all that said, honestly, it gives me one giant question when looking at all this. What the fridge happened at Illumination that made Dr. Seuss go, "Screw it, I am moving to Warner Brothers"? Like, immediately, what happened with this sudden change? And honestly, I think the biggest thing for me that I feel like it's actually pretty shocking that Dr. Seuss is immediately moving to Warner Animation Group is the fact that they didn't wait until the end of the year to do so. Because if you guys know, Illumination Entertainment is going to be releasing their animated adaptation of How the Grinch Stole Christmas in November. So I was thinking, like, why not just wait until that one is actually released, see how that movie would grow critically and financially, and see what happens. You know, I thought they would wait a little bit to see if their relationship can still stay with How the Grinch Stole Christmas, but I don't know what happened. Maybe they're just not happy with what happened with The Lorax, or maybe they're not happy with how production was going with How the Grinch Stole Christmas, so they just decided to just move out. But then again, when you do look into the history of the movie and animation works that do involve Dr. Seuss, you may recall that Dr. Seuss is not stable. They are known to pretty much be hopping from company to company. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, well, the thing is, of course, at the very beginning, even back during the days when Dr. Seuss was alive, they started out just sitting at Warner Brothers, where they didn't really make movies, but they made animated TV specials, and they were done by the legendary directors of Looney Tunes, including Chuck Jones and Friz Freleng. They were the ones in charge of making those projects for Dr. Seuss. But then, in the 2000s, or at least when the new millennium rolled along, they decided, okay, you know what? Enough with the little TV specials, let's go ahead and actually make movies. And so they decided to go and move to Universal. And that's when they decided to go and make How the Grinch Stole Christmas, the live action movie starring Jim Carrey. And that movie was actually a major hit. So they decided, okay, let's do another one. And then they released the 2003 film starring Mike Myers, The Cat in the Hat. And that movie was an absolute freaking nightmare. Enough of a nightmare to at least immediately get out of freaking Universal. So from there, what happened was that now Dr. Seuss decided to find a new home with Blue Sky Studios. And from there, they actually made Horton Hears a Who in 2008, I believe. And then afterwards, they decided to go ahead and maybe give Universal another chance and move into their new animation studio, which is Illumination Entertainment, where they decided to let them create a whole series of animated films based on the works of Dr. Seuss. The first one being The Lorax, which was released in 2012. And like I said before, they are going to release How the Grinch Stole Christmas, which is going to be released later on this year. And they were planning to make other movies, like Illumination was supposed to make a Cat in the Hat movie. And then suddenly they decided, okay, you know what? We're just going back to Warner Animation Group. And in a way, we did come full circle, or at least they kind of took two steps forward and two steps back, where they started out with Warner Brothers, then they went and jumped to Universal, then they went into Blue Sky, then stepped back into Universal, and then decided to go back onto Warner Brothers, back to where it's pretty much originated. And yeah, Warner Brothers, they really do have the leverage, considering that, yeah, this is the place where they made the popular version of How the Grinch Stole Christmas, like the animated classic, and all that kind of stuff. Like, they made, like, they even made their own animated version of, like, The Lorax, or Horton Hears a Who, or The Cat in the Hat, and all that kind of stuff. So, at the very least, they know what they're doing by going with Warner Animation Group. And when you do think about how they are right now, even though technically with Warner Animation Group, it is a relatively new company, and right now, like, the most that they've done is just Lego movies, and that's pretty much it. It's pretty rare that they would release other stuff as well. I will say, though, that at the very least, if they can make something like Storks, then I think Dr. Seuss might have a good place where they can make their animated features. Because when you think about movies like Storks, it is a film that actually does have the right amount of comedy, that has the right amount of cartoony animation. It's not way too overbearing, but it's enough to actually be creative, to be a little silly, to have fun with it. So they do have the materials to do so, and maybe they're not going to make the best movie out of it, but I think at this point, what we can ask from Warner Animation Group, the most we can ask is just make something better than the 2003 movie. Like, if they can do that, then I think they could succeed in their job. So yeah, honestly, it is a little strange that this actually did happen, but yeah, I guess now we're in a position where Dr. Seuss is more comfortable with Warner Brothers than with Illumination. But, you know, there is actually one thing that I could mention that could play a factor onto why Dr. Seuss decided to leave Illumination. It could be also with the results of The Lorax, because when you look at how it did at the box office, it's actually quite intriguing. And in terms of an Illumination film, yeah, it is honestly very subpar. Because the funny thing is, with The Lorax, I know it's actually very ironic at its time because, like, it is a very anti-corporate movie, and yet, back in 2012, it was one of the most heavily marketed films of the year. And you look at it, and what ended up happening was that domestically, it did extremely well for itself. It made a grand total of $214 million, according to Box Office Mojo. But in terms of the international box office, it made little to nothing. It only made a total of $135 million. So overall, the worldwide total is just $349 million. Now, technically for an animated film, that is actually pretty good. But then again, we're talking about Illumination Entertainment. By their standards right now, It honestly really sucked. Like, you know they could do better, especially with movies like the Despicable Me films, with Sing, and with The Secret Life of Pets. So maybe Dr. Seuss is not really happy with the numbers that The Lorax is getting. Like, The Lorax is not really getting the same Despicable Me numbers, so they decided to move on to Warner Brothers. So that could actually play a factor as well. But then again, that is just my theory. Maybe it's not true, but yeah, honestly, with all that said and done, I guess the only thing we can do is just wish Warner Animation Group the best of luck with The Cat in the Hat and many other Dr. Seuss projects. Okay, so for our next story right over here, honestly, when I saw this article on Variety, it got me scared. And I hope to God that this is just direct-to-DVD. Please just let it be direct-to-DVD. I don't want it to be out in theaters. I don't want to relive this nightmare again. And what I'm talking about is one of the worst animated films of the decade, Norm of the North. Yes, the 2016 disaster is going to be getting a sequel, and production seems to officially be greenlit at the Indian animation studio Assemblage. Now, for those of you who don't know what Assemblage is, let me just read a little bit on my source here in Variety that says that Mumbai-based Assemblage Entertainment was also involved in the production of Australian company Flying Bark's Blinky Bill the Movie and contributed to production services to the DreamWorks Animation television-produced Netflix series Troll Hunters, headed by Guillermo del Toro. Assemblage is currently also working on Arctic Justice, an animated feature set to release through Open Road Films later this year. The company says that it is working to shift from production services and co-productions. It reports that it is developing its own original content in collaboration with various Hollywood entities. So they're hoping that Assemblage Entertainment could be the next big thing, that they could really make a big name for themselves, that they could make animated features that big companies like Open Road and Lionsgate could actually go and distribute. And in terms of Norm in the North, they actually did some of the animation for the first Norm in the North film. And this is actually a bit historical right over here, since this actually is the first ever animated sequel that they are going to be making in India. And I don't mean exclusively for India, but I mean like the first animated sequel ever to be made in an Indian animation studio. And one thing that really got me scared about this article is the vagueness. Now, I'm just gonna say right now that I am aware that Lionsgate and Splash Entertainment are planning to go and make a Norm in the North sequel. And those ones are just going to be direct-to-DVD. In fact, they are actually going to be making two of them that are only going to be 45 minutes long. A little like what they're doing with Alpha and Omega with the cheap, ugly animation and everything. So, with all that said, and also, oh yeah, there is also one more thing that not too long ago, I don't know who was it, either Splash Entertainment or Lionsgate or Assemblage or someone really did screw up, and they accidentally posted for free on Vimeo for people to go and see a work-in-progress version of one of the sequels of Norm in the North. Now, this article right over here doesn't necessarily specify too much if this is actually going to be one of those direct-to-DVD sequels, or if this is going to be a completely different sequel to Norm in the North that they would want to release in theaters. I mean, technically, like, looking deeper into the article, it did state that it is the non-theatrical sequel is produced at Indian animation company Assemblage Entertainment. So that is a little bit of a relief. And, you know, I expressed my worrisome on social media and many people did come in to say like, nah, don't worry, Animat, it's all cool, it's all good, don't worry. It's not going to be released in theaters, it's just direct to DVD, you're safe. So at least there is that. So there is a very good chance that it is just going to be only direct to DVD and that's it. Like, I don't have to go and make another review in the veins of frickin' Norm in the North. But then again, there is also one thing that I am a little bit worried about is just the what ifs. You know when you fear something, and like even though your friends try to calm you down saying that it's all cool, it's not gonna happen, you still get a little bit of those what ifs in your head. Like, what if Lionsgate decided at the last minute to take those two direct-to-DVD sequels and just put it up in theaters? Like, what if that's gonna happen? What if they decided to change their mind? That's the one thing that I'm worried about. Honestly, I'm just scared if Lionsgate decided to put Norm of the North back in theaters. Like, that's my current fear right now with Norm of the North, is that I have to relive that nightmare again. And honestly, like, with Norm of the North in general, it was one of the worst theatrical experiences that I've ever sat through. And it's not because of, like, what's been going on around me. It's because of the movie. It's one of the very rare animated features where the animation is so bad. It is so disgusting to look at. I had to take off my glasses to watch this so that the whole thing can be blurry so I don't have to suffer through the god-awful work that's been put into frickin' Norm of the North. It's just nasty. Honestly, I don't want to live through that again. I mean, recently I went through a lot of really bad animated films, and the Emoji Movie was another nightmare to sat through. I don't want to live through that again, man. Just cut me some slack. I don't want another Norm of the North. Please help me, God. I don't want another Norm of the North movie in theaters. Oh, boy. But then again, there is a strong chance that's not the case. It'll just be direct-to-DVD. But then again, I hope. And so finally, we will now go and end things off with Animat's Pick of the Week. And for this week, I am actually going to go with a highly requested story. In fact, this is actually one that a lot of people on social media would go and contact me and try to show me this, like, oh, Animat, have you heard the news about this? Oh, did you see this, that this happened? And all that kind of stuff. Even more so than the Oscars, believe it or not. In fact, it's actually the opposite of the Oscars, and that is actually with the Razzie Awards. And why am I mentioning this in the animation podcast? Well, guess who is very prominent at this year's Razzies? Yes, ladies and gentlemen, The Emoji Movie is a strong competitor at this year's Golden Raspberry Awards, also known as the Razzies. And this actually broke a lot of big records in terms of the Razzie Awards and in animation. This is actually the first time ever in Razzie's history that a fully animated feature is nominated for Worst Picture, where the Emoji Movie is nominated among other really bad films released this year, including Baywatch, 50 Shades Darker, The Mummy starring Tom Cruise, and Transformers The Last Knight. But it's not just that. It's not just the fact that it's also nominated for Worst Picture. It's not also just the fact that it's been the first time in 9 years that the Razzies gave recognition to an animated feature, but the Emoji Movie also stands as the animated film that so far received the most nominations at the Razzie Awards. So it's not just for Worst Picture, but it is also for Worst Director. Where is it? Yes, right over here. So Tony Leondis is nominated for Worst Director. It is also nominated for Worst Screenplay. And it is also nominated for Worst Screen Combo, where it is nominated for any two obnoxious emojis. And personally, I will say that probably Worst Screen Combo is probably the funniest nomination out of all of them, or at least the way that they word the categories right over here. So it actually stated, like, if I may read the other nominations for Worst Screen Combo, it says, for 50 Shades Darker, any combination of two characters, two sex toys, or two sexual positions. There's also Transformers The Last Knight, where it says, any combination of two humans, two robots, or two explosions. Then there is also Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Men Tell No Tales, which is said, Johnny Depp and his worn-out drunk routine, which, even if I did like, or even if I did find Dead Men Tell No Tales to be okay, I will admit, yeah, that is kind of true that Johnny Depp really did suck in that film.
And then there's also Boo 2, A Madea Halloween for Tyler Perry and either that ratty old dress or the worn out wig. Which, by the way, may I add that Tyler Perry is also nominated for Worst Actress for his performance in Boo 2, A Madea Halloween. And Johnny Depp is actually nominated for Worst Actor in Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Men Tell No Tale. And with all that said, I just want to say one thing about the Razzies. That now that we have seen another moment of the Emoji Movie getting the true treatment that it does deserve, I have to say that when it comes to the Razzie Awards, I really couldn't care less about that stupid crap. Because honestly, the Razzie Awards really do mean nothing to me. And what actually made me realize this is actually in terms of the animation front. Because when you think about it, in the history of the Razzie Awards, like even before the Emoji Movie, there have only been 3 animated films that have ever been recognized at the Razzie Awards, whether it be winning one or being nominated by one. The first one was actually Thumbelina. And so far, it is the only one that actually did win a Razzie for Worst Original Song for Mary the Mole. And then after that, there was Disney's The Hunchback of Notre Dame, which was nominated for Worst Written Song for a movie that grossed more than $100 million at the domestic box office. Which that one, honestly, is really trying to grasp straws. Like, that one is like, okay, you're just finding an excuse to nominate The Hunchback of Notre Dame. Come on, that doesn't really count. And then there is also The Last Time, which is back in 2009, or at least the year when it was nominated, which is the 2008 animated film Star Wars The Clone Wars, which was nominated for Worst Remake, Ripoff, Sequel, or Follow-Up, and that kind of category right over there. So they put it all in that batch. And those 4 animated films, Hunchback, Thumbelina, Clone Wars, and The Emoji Movie, those were the only ones that the Razzie Awards would ever recognize. And yet, why aren't there any more animated films nominated? I mean, seriously, when you do think about some of the worst movies out there, a lot of them are actually animated. Why is it that the Razzie Awards decided to ignore movies like Escape from Planet Earth, the recent Ice Age sequels, Strange Magic, the Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs films, what the fridge else is there, like Legend of Oz, or even Norm of the North? Like, last year you don't give a crap about Norm of the North, but now you're giving all the attention to the Emoji Movie? Why? Like, those are legit some of the worst movies of their respective year. And yet you decided not to give a crap, and yet here's the Emoji Movie, and now getting all the awards and getting all these nominations. Like, why is it that you're ignoring animation until now? And I think I could pretty much tell you why. And that is because the Razzies, they just go for the easy targets. They just go after the movies that they think they are really popular. Like, they just go after the easy targets that people easily love to hate. And they go after the big name franchises, and they go after the movies that include the big name celebrities. Like, for example, like, you look at this year's list of nominees, most of them are filled with the same movies over and over again. Like, you see Transformers The Last Knight. That one, I think that's probably the one that's not, no, well, no, it's not in all of them, but like the grand majority of nominations, you'll find Transformers The Last Knight in there. And then you also got 50 Shades Darker, which I can guarantee you, it's not the first time that they took a 50 Shades movie and put it in the same list of categories. Like, they put it for Worst Picture, Worst Actress, Worst Actor, Worst Screen Combo, and all that kind of stuff, or Worst Director. Like, they're doing the same crap over and over again. And then they're going after stuff like The Mummy and Baywatch, mainly because it has popular actors like Tom Cruise and Dwayne Johnson and Zac Efron in there. Like, that's the thing. They're going after the easy targets. And not only that, but they're also going after movies
that they just want to pick on the celebrities. Like, for example, a real controversial decision that they put in here is actually Mother. And that one, people are entirely split. It's one of those movies that you either really love it or you really hate it. And yet, in the Razzies, I guess they're on the side of really hating it, because some of the nominees that they put in includes Jennifer Lawrence. They put in, where is he? They put in Javier Bardem. And they also put it in Worst Director, which is actually a very controversial decision. And there are a lot of people that, like, maybe they like Mother more so than people that do hate it. And even Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Men Tell No Tales. Yeah, I do agree, Johnny Depp was pretty awful. But it's not that bad to really get recognized at the Razzies. Like, yeah, you can pick out Johnny Depp how many times you want, but I don't really think, like, honestly, like, Javier Bardem did do a pretty good job in that movie. Honestly, it is a little bit ridiculous. And another reason that you could tell that the Razzie Awards are pretty much bullcrap is that it's not just animated films that they mostly ignore. It's also the real movies that are considered some of the worst of the worst. Because the thing is, if you go and ask any professional critic out there, like, if you go and ask them what do they think is the worst movie of 2017, like, some of them, of course, will probably list films like 50 Shades Darker or The Emoji Movie or Transformers The Last Night and all that kind of stuff. But what they will tell you that is actually the worst of the worst, they will list you things that are not even recognized by the Razzies. Like, they're not going after the real ones that are really considered the worst. Like, The Bye Bye Man, or The Snowman, or Chips, or The Book of Henry. This is why the Razzies, they just go after the most popular ones. The ones that people just love to hate. And especially, like, in the voting process, it's the kind of voting process that they let audiences vote. Like, anybody can go ahead and vote for it. It doesn't matter if you haven't seen movies like Transformers The Last Night or 50 Shades Darker or The Emoji Movie. You could go ahead and vote for which you think is going to win the Razzies and which you think is going to be funny to see them get heavily slammed on with a Raspberry Award. You know, it's just really, the way that they would execute the Razzies is entirely bullcrap, I believe. I mean, I'm not entirely against the Razzies in general. I do find it to be a really good idea, and if executed well, it would be fantastic. It would be a lot of fun to watch, and it would not only mock bad movies, but it would also celebrate them as well. Kind of like how people are treating The Room nowadays. But honestly, with the way that they're presenting, like, the Razzie Awards right now, going after the big-name franchises and the big-name celebrities, and going after the ones that everybody hates, that it's pretty much popular because everybody hates it, it really does more harm than good. In fact, in a way, the Razzie Awards are a little bit like CinemaSins, where, yeah, some people can argue that it's just made as a joke, it's not the type of thing that's supposed to be taken seriously or stuff like that. But in reality, due to the poor execution of the joke, it's doing a little bit more harm than good. And that's why it's mostly looked down upon instead of actually being a thing that people would be excited to go and see what's going on. So yeah, I do notice that The Emoji Movie is nominated and all that kind of stuff, but it's far too late for me to even care about. So, like, yeah, the Emoji Movie is nominated for Worst Picture. But with how the Razzies handle themselves, does it really mean anything? And that is all that I've got for this week, so I just want to say thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of the Animation Podcast. You could go ahead and find more of my work at film-book.com. All you have to do is search for Mathieu Brunet or the Animation Podcast. You can also find me on Twitter at animat505. Now, if you have listened to this podcast on iTunes or any other podcast service, go ahead and do us a big favor to go and rate and review this episode. That would be very nice of you. And if you are listening to this podcast on YouTube, then hit that little like button and leave us a little comment on your thoughts about the news this week. Tune in next week for the latest episode of the Animation Podcast and all things animation. Thank you guys so much for listening, and until next week, see you later, dudes.